exclusively on Paramount Plus. Get ready.
Vamanos!
To explore like never before.
Swiper knows. Swiping!
Oh, man!
Swing into action.
We need your help.
Woohoo!
Yay!
With a girl who put adventure on the map.
I don't think I can do it, Dora.
I'll protect you, Boots. Together, we got this.
Todos juntos!
Dora, the brand new series. Stream with your family now, exclusively on Paramount Plus.
From the world of Sonic the Hedgehog, a new hero arrives.
I am
ready. Is there anyone stronger?
No.
Tougher?
No.
Funnier?
I do not make jokes. I make warriors.
Knuckles, now streaming only on Paramount Plus.
Yes!
Here we see Bikini Bottom, teeming with life. Home of one of my favorite creatures, SpongeBob SquarePants. Yes, of course he lives in a pineapple, you silly.
He started showing me little drawings, little doodles, and I remember when he showed me that square SpongeBob for the first time, you know, he was working on like an amorphous SpongeBob. Originally was just like kind of a more realistic amorphous sponge. And yeah. At some point it clicked, and so he drew the square, and he showed it to me, and I was like, oh, yeah, that's it. That's really good, you know.
Welcome to SpongeBob Binge Pants,
Nickelodeon's official podcast about all things SpongeBob.
I'm Hector Navarro.
And I'm Frankie Grande.
We're back with an amazing interview today. Really one of the most important figures in SpongeBob history. We are talking to Mr. Derek Dryman today. Derek was in development for the show itself in the very beginning, working on creating these characters, creating the stories, worked on the first three seasons, the first movie, and in that became a supervising director and producer on the show. Just an awesome, awesome guy.
This man was in the room where it happens for everything. So we get all of this amazing information in this interview today, as well as we touch on some of his most recent work. So we're going to get into that as well. So it's a wonderful interview and I'm really excited. Hector, shall we get into it?
Let's do it. Hope you guys enjoy. I want to talk about Hotel Transylvania, Transformania. You co-directed the movie with Jennifer Kluska. What I would love to know is, what was the most rewarding part of that experience, Derek?
Hotel T was my first, you know, directing job on a full feature. I've been working in features for a bunch of years, and
yeah.
I've directed shorts and commercials. I, you know, was doing commercials for a little while, and, you know, and then a lot of TV stuff. So the feature was rewarding just to finish it. It was rewarding to get through it. Things are so big. The level of quality of the animation and the team that Sony has, they're some of the best people in the world that are working there. So just working with that level of, I don't know, skill, it's just inspiring. And it would push me to be better, do better, try to direct better. It's hard when you have these people that are, they're the best in the world, and they're looking to you, okay, what are we going to do now? And it's like, I don't want to send them down the wrong road, you know?
Coming from the world of TV animation, you're very familiar with what it takes to make a cartoon for television and the budgets and those constraints that you get. Was that something that, like, knowing that, and then you come to the feature world, were you ever surprised where you're like, man, if only we could do this, and someone's like, we can do that. You're like, oh, whoa, what, really? I mean, was that kind of a bit of a change for you going into the world of features?
Well, when I worked at Illumination for a couple of years, and that's how Illumination was. You know, you could get almost any song you wanted. You could get, again, some of the greatest animators in the world were doing it. So there was always a deadline, but if you need a little more time, you could get it most of the time. So.
Wow.
That was kind of an unshackling. It's like, wow, you can almost do anything you can think of, which could lead you down a rabbit hole of all of a sudden, you know, you're kind of second guessing yourself constantly. But so that was exciting because that was only limited by your imagination, or I don't know what you could come up with, or what everybody liked, that kind of thing.
That's awesome.
Hotel T was a little different because the schedule was really compressed. They wanted to get it out quick. So there were a lot of limitations on it. And so actually the TV experience, and Jen had TV experience too, and, you know, of course Gendy has TV experience, so, you know, we all kind of came out of television, and so we knew how to make the best out of what you have, and sometimes great things come out of that too. It's, you know, you got to make decisions fast and then stick to them and drive it all the way through the whole process. So it's a give and take, and it is exciting to have all the money in the world to make these things, but then it's not always the best, because, like I said, I've seen some movies where people just spin and they keep coming up with different, oh, we can make it better, we can make it better. And in this attempt to make something great, they forget how to make something just good and how to tell a story well.
Yeah.
And eventually you do run out of time and money, and then it's like pencils down, and then sometimes you're left with like, oh, this isn't so hot. But that didn't happen. Like I said, Hotel Tea was nice because we were just hit the ground running. Gendy wrote a script. We made the script as he was writing it, you know, and then we would kind of tweak it as we went, and there wasn't really any time to kind of rethink, you know.
Yeah. No, I love that. To your point, though, like if the shark had worked in Jaws, Steven Spielberg's movie would have been different. It would not have been as good. But the fact that that the robot shark didn't work, he had to pivot, and it was then the most successful suspenseful movie of all time. So that's a great example.
Yeah, that's, you know, television's a great example of that. Like television animation, right? It's super limited compared to feature, but you can make things that stick around and hit people years after you make them, and then you could have all the money in the world and make a movie and it kind of fizzles and people forgot about it. Yeah, like on SpongeBob, it was always like, try to find what kids relate to. It's always kids' stories. It's kind of, what are they going through in their life? You can make a story about that. Every kid is going through that, and then every adult has gone through that, so they can remember what it was like, you know, the embarrassments and things like that.
Oops. I guess I ripped my pants again.
Once again, dude, you have split my sides.
Interesting detail for Hotel Tea is the editor from Hotel Tea was the editor from the SpongeBob show, Lynn Hobson.
Oh, wow.
She was on all the, you know, all the TV show, and then she did the first movie with us.
So you really had an all-star crew of TV animation veterans. Like you really did. Like everybody had that background, that background, mentality and skill set.
Yeah,
that's great.
Yeah, two kind of veteran television guys worked on almost the whole show for us and did a lot of our boarding. And again, sometimes they would get a little too theatrical with their boarding, and Jen and I would have to, okay, tone it down. Remember, TV, think about television. Like, how, if you had to do this for TV, how would you do it? And then it kind of changes the way you have to think and stage. And but, you know, feature storyboard artists who had never worked in television, they might not understand that language, or they might think, oh, this is cheap and easy. You still got to be creative. You still have to entertain people, but doing it in a way that works on television is a little different.
Yeah, it's all about clarity. It's all about, you know, being able to tell that story in a clear and concise and simple way. And sometimes that is more difficult.
I'm okay.
You know, you're the first sea critter to ever visit.
I can't imagine why.
Can I get you anything?
Water would be nice.
I'm going to put these in a vase.
Take your time.
You met a bunch of awesome folks on Rocko's Modern Life, and eventually that would coalesce into the SpongeBob team. But even before SpongeBob, I have to mention this. Derek, you worked on Hey Arnold, Cat Dog, the Action League Now stuff for Kablam, which was so much fun. Just kind of tell us briefly, what was it like to be at Nickelodeon at that magical time in cartoon history, man? Everybody doing all these great shows and this great stuff.
It's funny to say it's magical. It was my first job. We were all in our 20s because it was a non-union shop. And so they couldn't get the really experienced big leaguers because they were all at Disney or Warner's or those different places. So they would usually hire one or two very experienced people.
Right.
And then they would hire a bunch of kids right off the street. You know, Steve was a experimental animation major. Like, he wasn't even a character animator. Like, Nickelodeon was pretty young, and there weren't a lot of rules yet. Someone like me could just hop around and, hey, I'm a writer. And then they would let you write, you know. And, oh, I'm an artist,
That's
too.
Awesome.
And then they would let you draw. It was they kind of just needed people to do stuff. And if you went up and said, oh, that's what I do, then, you know, they would at least give you a chance.
Today's the big day, Gary. Look at me! I'm Megan! Gotta be in top physical condition for today, Gary.
And it feels like with every person we talk to, Derek, talking about that era, that everyone's very humble and they're like, man, we're just a bunch of kids. We're just doing whatever. But Frankie and I, because we're these adults who get to like analyze it, we're going, they had the exact right style of outsiders and people who had heart and people who, like you were saying, Derek, like kind of outside the box, typically to what animation in television was happening at the time, that all of these folks and everything that they were bringing to the table would lead to these great and unique Nickelodeon shows.
The thing you touched on, you know, I really believe what makes a show are the people working on it. And so, yes. You know, if you change up the crew, you're going to get a different result.
Sure.
And that's true,
sure.
In movies. That's true in TV. There's a certain flavor that is in the crew that, you know, if you worked on it, you can see it when you watch the movie or the show or the
totally.
TV show. So yeah, for sure. It's the personalities involved, which is, you know, it's nice. That's kind of the artist hand, you know, that you're sensing.
Yeah. And that's what made SpongeBob so unbelievably special. They were just the perfect people in the perfect place at the perfect time. And you were there. So we would love to talk to you a little bit about, like, how did you get involved and when did you learn about this show?
So I started working with Steve on Rocco. He had become the creative director. The same season that I jumped up and became a storyboard artist. My partner was Mark O'Hare. Mark was Steve's storyboard artist. So Steve and Mark already had a connection. You know, I came in, I just had a ton of energy and I just thought, oh, let's make cartoons. And, you know, Mark really had to like, all right, slow down, take it easy. You know, he was very methodical and just kind of would think about things. And I would present all these ideas and he would think and redo. Steve is exactly that way too. He was very methodical, very kind of slow moving. You know, you could present him with a bunch of ideas. He wouldn't say yes or no right away. He would think about them. You know, he had this idea to do a show. He approached Robert Skull, who was a close friend of his, who was another storyboard director. But Robert was finishing Rocco and he was going to get on a boat and he was going to sail the world. And he was like, he needed a big break. He was done. And
wow.
So he was unavailable. And then Steve also asked Mark if he was interested in working with him on this idea. And Mark had just sold a comic strip called Citizen Dog to Universal Press. So that was kind of his big dream, was to do comic strips. So he was kind of going off in that direction. And so I was in the room when Steve brought it up, and Mark, you know, Mark's really good at saying no. You know, he's like, you know, I can't do it. I'm too busy doing this other thing. And so he left, and then I was sitting there. For me, I was so happy to be drawing storyboards, and I knew Rocco was ending. You know, I said to Mark, I'm like, boy, I would do that. And he's like, well, he's like, go ask him. So I followed him out.
Aww.
I ran after him into the hallway. I caught him in, like, there was
an
atrium, and I'm like, hey, I would do it if you need somebody. You know, if you can't find anybody, keep me in mind. And so,
So
then months went by. And Steve was upstairs finishing up Rocco, and I was downstairs on Arnold. And I just walked by, and we always talk and say hi. And he started showing me little drawings, little doodles. And I remember when he showed me the square SpongeBob for the first time, you know, he was working on like an amorphous SpongeBob. Originally was just like kind of a more realistic amorphous sponge. And at some point it clicked, and so he drew the square, and he showed it to me, and I was like, oh yeah, that's it. That's really good, you know. I mean, I think he'd already decided on it, but it was the first time I saw it, and it was one of those moments of, you know, when you see something for the first time that you like, it's something that totally makes sense, but no one had ever really done it before. And it was like kind of that moment of like, oh, that's a really genius idea. He eventually, you know, approached me about it. And so he hired me to work with him as he would develop the show. And his original idea was, let's do a storyboard. You know, let's write an episode. And so I'd go over to his house a couple of days a week after work, and we would just kind of try to write an episode. And then that quickly evolved into, we don't really know enough about the character yet or the world to actually write an episode. So it eventually just became times we just get together and just talk about the characters. You know, we also, you know, had Nick Jennings working on backgrounds and painting style, and, you know, trying to interpret Steve's painting style into a show. And then Tim Hill was also helping Steve organize it. And he would kind of bring up these hard questions about, you know, just from a writer's point of view, you know. And so it maybe took like 9 months or something of Steve kind of working through until he got the Bible together, and then he pitched it.
There it is.
the finest eating establishment ever established for eating. The Krusty Krab. Home of the Krabby Patty, with a help wanted sign in the window. For years I've been dreaming of this moment. I'm gonna go in there, march straight to the manager, look him straight in the eye, lay it on the line, and I can't do this!
So wow. when
that's
you
amazing.
Were... It's so cool when you again, just to hear you very humbly, because we built this up. It's this big legendary thing and this piece of cartoon history that you guys were there for. And you're just like, I just walked by, said, what's up? Saw,
yeah,
you know,
it's so fun.
Love it. I love it.
Do you remember anything that you guys came up with that didn't make it into kind of like a character or a story idea that you think it's kind of crazy to think that we even mentioned that all these years later? Like, can you recall anything that sort of fell on the cutting room floor, as it were, that's, you know, somebody or you threw out, any kind of juicy, you know, little what ifs that we don't know about?
I remember when he first showed me Patrick, I forget what his name was, but he had a starfish and he was pink and he was really angry looking. And the idea was that he would be this like angry character who was really mad about being pink. And he was like this macho guy, but he hated the fact that, you know,
whoa,
people didn't think he was, you know, he just had this chip on his shoulder because he was pink. And that was about a day, because he showed that to me. And that's really what happened, was that Steve would spend time working on things, and then we would talk about it. And then I would just throw ideas
right
back and just talk about it, maybe doodle a little bit. And then I would leave, and then he would stew on it. And then the next time he would have made some choices based on what we talked about. And that process of how we worked, that's kind of how it worked all the way through, was that I would give Steve a couple ideas and then I would go take a walk. And by the time I got back to the conference room, it gave him time to think and be on his own for a minute. And then he was like, okay, this is what we're going to do. And I forget what I said about the Bully Patrick version. And when I came back the next time, he was like, oh, no, it's going to be, I think he's going to be the friend, the dumb guy. It was way closer to the Patrick, you know. So that was definitely one
amazing
version. Yeah.
What kind of place is this? There's no water in here.
I tried to tell you.
We've got to get out of here.
You're doing it wrong.
Wait, no. We've got to get out.
The show is picked up and you sit down and you start making Help Wanted. I mean, as you're doing this and you're creating this, did you have a sense that this was going to be like a big hit, or were you just kind of having fun like you've been doing up until this point?
Well, I mean, I was coming off of Rocco and just really being in love with the process of storyboarding and storyboard writing. When we finally got to do, you know, and then I was on Hey Arnold for a long time, and then I was on CatDog during this period, so I got to do it a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But when we got to finally do Help Wanted, I was just really excited to do it. And Steve was such a funny guy. He was such a good joke writer. And you work with people that are really good, or really better than you. It kind of forces you to, I got to really get my A game on. So it was definitely intimidating, but super fun. I was very proud of it. And I just thought, people are going to love this thing, you know. But again, you don't know. I mean, there were definitely people that did not love it. I remember when we showed the finished pilot to a conference room full of people. It was like a couple shows worth of people were just all piled into this conference room all watching it. And it definitely got laughs, but it was not like people weren't like stripping their clothes off. Like, this is the greatest thing ever. It was just kind of like, I remember one guy went to me. He's like, yeah, it was cute. I goes, I don't know where you're going to go with it. It's like, he got the job. He was, but I loved it. I was really proud of it and thought it was exactly what I wanted to do.
I think that's really funny. Like, I don't know where you're going to go with it. And then 20 years later.
Yeah, exactly. I've seen him since, and he was like, hey, I was wrong. was wrong.
That's great. So. That's great.
That's awesome.
Hector, I think we have to stop the interview here. Because there's too much information, there's too much good tea that is still yet to be spilled, and
too
so
much.
We're excited to announce this is a two-parter, everybody. So make sure you come back next week to hear the rest of our amazing interview with Derek Dryman about all things SpongeBob and all the origin stories about where he was, when it happened. Amazing, amazing interview to come. So make sure you check that out next week.
Thanks for listening. We'll see you guys in a week for part two. Bye.